What is up, team? Welcome back. Today, I am sharing a Q&A episode that I did on my good friend and client Jeff Haynes' podcast, The Mind-Muscle Connection. So, in this episode, we really dig into a couple questions. First, how to really maximize your look for a photo shoot or vacation, whatever it may be, just any event you want to look super lean for. A very deep dive into all the considerations to take for that. From setting up your initial macros to peaking the week before the actual event. My results so far from using the weighted vest. We had a super cool chat about some of our early inspirations in the fitness industry and kind of who inspired us to do what we do today. And then finished off talking about some of the research we would like to see related to training and nutrition in the future. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and
welcome
hop
to another
right
episode of the Mind Muscle Connection podcast. And today I am joined by Jeremiah Bear for the fourth time on the podcast. So Jeremiah, thank you for coming back on today.
Dude, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. These are always, I feel like they're always great chats. And then today we'll do another Q&A. But first, I see you have the weighted vest on. So why don't you kind of fill in the audience on what's going on there with the weighted vest?
All right. So I'm deep into a fat loss phase about it's almost been a month ago now. Have you looked into James Krieger? He took a client through a contest prep where the whole time they basically replaced body weight lost and then some with weighted apparel. So they did it a little bit differently, but basically the idea is like so much your metabolism. As we diet, of course, the metabolism downregulates a bit. But so much of that is just due to the fact that it takes less calories to basically maintain a smaller body at rest and to move a smaller body through space, right? Like you weigh less basically, so thus it takes less energy to move you and keep you alive as a whole. So basically the idea is by replacing weight lost with like weighted apparel, like a weighted vest, you will kind of make up for that, keep metabolism a little bit higher through a fat loss phase and not like see quite as much metabolic downregulation. And again, James Krieger has a super interesting article on all this. They basically took his name was Eric. I don't recall the last name. But basically they took him through an entire contest prep and it was super interesting to see how much different like that prep was versus what he had done before, because basically he was able to get shredded on about 900 calories. I believe it was right around 1,000 calories. I can't recall the specifics, but a large amount more calories than he was able to for like previous contest preps. And it was super interesting. Like the whole time they started him at one calorie intake. So let's say like 2,400. They didn't adjust what I believe it was like 14 weeks. Didn't adjust his macros a single time. Just as he kept losing weight, they kept adding weight to the weighted apparel. Didn't adjust his steps or his like or increased cardio or anything of that nature either. And it was super interesting because again, like at the end of the prep, he had gotten shredded, but it was all from like, he was eating a lot more than previously, but he was wearing a weighted vest. So that's basically where this came from. And I'm working with Steve Hall, who's going through a contest prep. He's also doing this. So he's kind of been guiding me through the process as well. So it's been interesting, man, for sure. So basically what I'm doing is, so along with that, like along with the, basically we're replacing body weight loss with weight in the vest, it's also thought from some rodent studies that some of what regulates your body weight. So we know like leptin is more or less a body fat regulating hormone, right? Like when leptin levels are low, basically some mechanisms kick in, like hunger increases, energy expenditure decreases. So it kind of wants to drive our body fat up. And for those that don't know, again, like leptin is a hormone that's pretty responsive for most individuals, for healthy individuals. Leptin is a hormone, like as we eat less, leptin levels drop. As we eat more and fat cell sizes increase, leptin levels kind of increase and normalize. And then that's kind of what regulates where our body fat is at, right? So it's thought though that, and this is purely from rodent studies, but it's thought that just your body sensing more weight on your bones, to kind of simplify, is another way that your body kind of regulates where body fat is at. And again, they did these rodent studies where they actually like, they inserted like weight inside of them. So it was kind of like a weight vest underneath their skin. And it was super interesting to see again, like these rats that they like added more weight to lost a lot of weight without a decrease in hunger. So it seemed to show that it was independent of like the leptin response. So is all this making sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So from there again, like basically then the thought process behind that is, so like this sense of weight on your bones, to put it simply, is potentially what could help regulate some hunger. So it's also thought that maybe like the hypothesis that Krieger put out there is like that maybe that could help keep hunger lower, like adding weight via weighted apparel as you lose weight could help keep hunger lower across the course of the diet. Now, again, I've been doing this for about a month. What I'll say is, so, and that's also why I'm at my standing desk right now, right, as well, because if I'm like wearing this, but I'm sitting, it's not, it doesn't really achieve the thing. So basically what I'm doing right now is 6 hours a day standing at my desk wearing this, then getting most of my daily movement, about a half to three quarters of my daily steps wearing this as well. And yeah, I would say my rate of loss has picked up just a little bit the last couple of weeks. I was on a podcast with Chaz and I was kind of saying, hey, I don't know if the juice is necessarily worth the squeeze with this. The first week was, I didn't realize what a big commitment it was going to be to go from not wearing this to like my back and my hips were just jacked up, dude. It's surprising how much of a difference it actually makes. Or like, I didn't really think through like, okay, it's Saturday and we're going to go like do all the normal things, but I got to wear this weighted apparel also. So it's kind of a different, like, it looks like you're wearing like a bulletproof vest everywhere, or like a bomb vest or something like that. But no, man, it's been interesting. I will say hunger has definitely ramped up along with rate of loss, which is somewhat expected. My rate of loss was slowing a decent bit. So what, I'm down, I started this fat loss phase. I just finished week 10. Today's the last day, week 10. I started at 232. I'm at 211 now. So 21 pounds down. And I mean, it's hard to differentiate. Like the last 4 weeks, I've definitely noticed again, like hunger has increased. Rate of loss has picked up a little bit because it was slowing down to about 1 to 1.5. And now I'm about 2 to 2.5 pounds again the last three, four weeks, actually. I definitely, though, I don't think I've seen like I haven't seen a decrease in hunger. But I don't know, to be determined. It's very hard to tell yet still like what of that is the best, but it is interesting to see like rate of loss has increased pretty significantly the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's really cool. A lot of interesting stuff there on that. And yeah, I've read the James Krieger stuff and it was interesting and it makes sense, you know, especially because he talks a lot about metabolic adaptation and it makes sense. You know, you're still carrying around that extra weight and part of the reason a lot of people have that issue of weight slowing down is they're just carrying around less weight, which means, you know, you're not burning as many calories as you are when you just don't have as much mass. So it makes sense there. And it's really cool. I'm glad that you're actually experiencing it for yourself because now I can actually ask you. And it's weird because I feel like he wrote that like over a year ago and I hadn't heard anything about it recently, but now like Steve Hall started doing it. Was Steve kind of the one that kind of talked you into it? Or
I remember reading it and I was like, dude, I have to do that next time I do a fat loss phase. And then I kind of just forgot about it because again, it came out like 1 to 2 years ago. Then I saw Steve doing it and I was like, oh shit. Like that is something that I really wanted to experiment with as well. I would for sure say like, there's a very niche population of people that I actually think it would be applicable for. And like, even if you look at like how the dude that went to the contest prep, he was wearing it for like 95%. Of his day. It was a lot more than even like I know he was wearing it to train. He was wearing it for most everything. Whereas it's still like 6 to 7 hours, I would say feels like a lot. And I think that, so like Brandon DeCruz, who was on my podcast, a couple weeks ago, he was talking about how he was doing it when he still had his office job. So he was like, he had a big ass vest and he was like always like wearing baggy clothes to work and whatnot to try to hide what he had going on there. But I don't know if, do you know who Ben House is?
Yeah.
Okay. So I saw he posted about this as well, because I know he was trying to do it for, I think it was like almost 2 weeks. And I think he pulled it because he was saying like his feet, his back were just wrecked, which your feet, it is weird, man. Like your feet just fucking hurt after. I know he said like, basically he saw like 100 to 200 calorie increase per day from wearing it, which is interesting. If you look at that, it's like, would I really rather do that than like maybe go incline walk for another 20 minutes? And so, but I mean, that said, like, as well, I don't think that's a large enough sample size to say like about 10 days worth of wearing it. So I'm interested to, again, like at the end of this, see, I want to have Steve on as well. Like once I wrap this up and like, he's pretty bit deeper into his and like kind of chat through like what he's seen, what I've seen with it, but interesting concept anyways.
Yeah, it is. And I like that you bring up, is the juice worth the squeeze? Cause I feel like some people would hear this and think like, oh yeah, I'm totally going to do it. But just like with anything, you know, you got to weigh the pros and cons of it. Like, is wearing it for however long worth the little bit of extra food that you might be able to eat, or the little bit of extra less hunger, you know? And I think that that's obviously what you're trying to figure out here. But I think it's also, it's like two people that, you know, they hear, oh, I want to go work out 5-6 times a week, or I want to go do 2-a-days. But then you don't think about all the little shit that comes along with it that you, you know, like, for example, like if you do 2-a-day training or something like that, like then you have to think about whole little things like driving to the gym, the, you know, having to go twice a day, like how that weighs on you mentally. And I feel like it's the same thing there with the weighted vest, where like on paper, it sounds great. But then when you actually do it, you start to see all these like little things that you have to do with it. You're like, shit, I didn't even think that this was going to be something that would be an issue, you know?
Oh no, for sure. It cracked me up too, by the way. Are you guys getting a dog, you and Allie?
No.
So Katie the other day, because we're getting our dog.
That's right.
She showed me this conversation, because it was like, she's like, this is so funny, look at this. Because it was like, you had DM'd her, now Allie's going to like want a dog or something like that. And then Allie had DM'd her like, oh my gosh, like we got to get a dog. And then I like scrolled up one, and it was like Allie responding to a picture. Katie posted this picture, like just making fun of me in my weighted vest. And she was like, ha, 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 why are they like this? And it just cracked me up, dude. Because I was like, Jeff gets it. If anybody gets it, that's my guy.
Yeah, that would probably be how the conversation would go. She would probably think I'm crazy if I was wearing a vest all day. But hey, good for you though, for sticking to it though. Yeah, that's cool, man. I'm glad that overall it's going well. But and two, like you said, you know, like kind of like I was just mentioning there, like you know, you're figuring out if it's worth the squeeze. And like you said, it's also not going to be for everybody too. Like it's, you know, going to be a certain population, and like it's probably not going to be best for just like general pop clients to wear something like this.
No, absolutely not. I would say that like as of now, like if it's something like you want to experiment with, I'd be like, okay, yeah, like for sure. But there's probably like, I don't know if I would actually recommend it to any of my clients as of now, from what I've seen. So we'll to be determined.
And it's, and I know you're this type of person too. I'd be the same way. It'd be one of those things where I would do it and then I just would follow through on it, but I'd probably hate every second of it just because I'm like, I got to finish it out. I can't like not do it. And I'm sure, you know, maybe you're feeling that way. Maybe you're not. I don't know. I do have one more question on it. Is there like a, cause I know like Steve talked about this. Is there a certain amount of time you think you should wear it each day, or is that just kind of part of the programming of it all?
Yeah. So again, like the minimum is 6 hours a day.
It is. Okay.
It's 6 hours standing per day. Because again, like with the thought of like the weight being sensed on your bones, basically, like if I'm wearing it, but I'm sitting, like, nah, I don't know if that really accounts for much. Right. And also it's super uncomfortable to sit down wearing. So, but regardless, yeah, dude, no, it's, we'll see. I'm going to do like a full review on it. Again, I want to talk about it with Steve on the podcast also, and I'll probably turn it into a blog just to talk about my experiences. But yeah, as of now, I would say probably hold off if you're considering buying one. Yeah, I don't know if I have anything else on that.
Yeah. Okay. So you said based on that, it's about at least 6 hours a day, and it makes sense. Cause you, like you said, you don't want to be sitting down all day with it. It's kind of going to defeat the purpose if you're doing that. So cool. Right. Cool. How much longer do you have in your cut again?
The plan was 10 weeks actually, but I think we're going to extend it out another like 2 to 3. So again, I'm down to 211. I'd like to get back to right about 205. I want to get back to building again, but I want a long runway. I mean, like as of now, I'm super flat. So we can already assume like I'll probably be, once I carb up, I'll probably be like 3 to 4 pounds heavier. And I also don't think I want to get back up to like the 230s. So probably, again, I want to have a good amount of time to build. But yeah, it'll probably be, I would say another 3 weeks tops. Again, I'd like to get back to about 205, and I'm losing about 2 pounds a week right now.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I was going to say 2 pounds a week. That's a pretty solid deficit there. Cool. So a couple more weeks and then back to building. So, Sweet, man. Sounds like everything's going well there. I'm looking forward to seeing your review, your overall review on the weight vest. I'm sure a lot of people are too, but yeah. So you want to dive into the questions now?
Yeah, dude, let's get it.
Cool. So first question is from Zach. So it's how to maximize looking good and prepping for a photo shoot slash vacation. So kind of a loaded question here. So, you know, you can take it as what you want. And then I guess if anything pops up or anything that I want to ask on top of it, we can kind of dive into and yeah, we'll go from there.
All right. How to maximize looking good and how to prep for a photo shoot and a vacation.
Yeah. Slash vacation. Yeah. Or either one or separately. Yeah.
All right. So this is basically like to maximize 2 years and then like look the absolute best for that shoot. This is basically, I would say at least like a 1-2 year process, to be frank, like to maximize actually looking good for that photo shoot. Like for example, if a client hops on board and they don't have any muscle and it's like, hey, I want to get super lean for this shoot. Okay. Well, like what's the actual look that you want, right? Like if you don't want to look skinny, cool. We can go right into a diet, but you probably need to spend a considerable amount of time building. So I would first, and I think this is one of the most common mistakes people make before like going into any type of photo shoot prep or cut. First, I would assess, hey, do you actually have the prerequisite muscle to take the look that you want to that shoot? And especially like as I'm assuming this dude's natural, like as a natural dude, unfortunately, you probably have less muscle than you think you do like before you start a cut. So again, I would say first and foremost, like the first step to that is spending a solid amount of time focusing on eating a slight surplus and building muscle. And then from there, man, like I feel like we get super nuanced with this, but basically I would say try to lose 0.5 to 1% of body weight until you are shredded. And that's, man, I don't know if, do you want to dig deep into like, I feel like there's so much we can unpack as far as like, I don't know if you want to dig in like the peak week. I know he asked a similar question in my question box, but he also asked about like poses, pictures, things of that nature. I mean, like in the simplest term, it's make sure you have enough muscle, then lose 0.5 to 1% of body weight per week. Make sure you're eating plenty of protein. Keep training hard. Always train like you're building muscle through the entire fat loss phase because you want to make sure you're maintaining that muscle, or if at possible, build a little bit of muscle during the fat loss phase as well. But at least try to maintain that muscle. And again, you don't want to switch to like, okay, now that I'm in this fat loss phase, I'm trying to just circuit train. A photo shoot prep like really isn't, the thing about that is like a photo shoot prep isn't really different than any other, like a gym pop, like, hey, I just want to look good for the summer, right? It's really just like the extent that we take it to, or like you just had Peter Fishing on, right?
Yeah.
Okay, like it reminds me of him. Like I know we talked about like how to get shredded for a bodybuilding show, and it was same thing. He's like, it's like that much. It's not different really. It's just like how far I get. So a photo shoot prep is kind of like for most people, like you got shredded for your photo shoot, but for most people, a photo shoot prep is, but still like, would you say you would have been like stage ready at that point? We probably would have wanted to get you a little leaner, right?
Probably a little leaner, but. And saying that, I also felt like I was probably as lean as I was in my first two bodybuilding shows. But in saying that, I also got marked off for not being lean enough for the two bodybuilding shows. So take that for what it's worth.
Okay. So photo shoot prep is kind of, I would say like between, okay, I'm shredded for summer, or I'm lean for summer, but it's sustainable. Typically a photo shoot prep is we're pushing past the point where it's okay, we can't sustainably stay this lean all the time, but it's not the point where like, we're ready for a bodybuilding show, right? We're probably, for most people, 4 to 6 weeks away from that still, right? And it, honestly, like that's really it. It's basically just be smart about the way that you're losing. Again, I would say 0.5 to 1% of body weight per week is typically like where I like to cap it. If we're losing much faster than that for too long, you're probably okay to see. So I would say for most clients, like, first 4 to 6 weeks where we have more body fat and thus we're less likely to lose muscle, we can lose closer to like 1 to 1.5% of body weight per week. But past that point, it's really smart to dial it back to about 1% per week. And I would say for most people, losing more than 1% anyways is just a grind, right? Like you're yeah. Really, really going to be feeling that deficit. And man, like past that, it's just getting super lean. We go into typically for a lot of my clients, depending on the client. So for you, we took you through like a whole carb front loading peak week protocol, right? Where it was like, okay, we've done all the work, you're lean. Now we want to kind of experiment with how many carbs. So basically here, we bump you to right around maintenance. So, okay, we're a week out from the shoot. We're going to like what? I think we probably added like 250 to 300 grams more carbs, right?
Somewhere around there. It was a good amount though.
So like Monday, we add 250 to 300 carbs. And we're just working through like, okay, how do you feel in your training? I'm having you send me pictures of your physique morning, night, keep me updated on like how you're feeling. Okay. And then it's like, and I was just talking to another client through this process. So I was just looking back at what like your front loading protocol. And basically it looked like the first couple of days, it was like 450. You were feeling a little bit full, a little bit spilled over. So we dropped carbs at 300 or 400, still a little bit full, a little bit spilled over. And then I think we decided on 350 carbs. And from there it was like, okay, this is like the perfect, like my pumps are crazy. I feel super full, super vascular, but again, I'm not like spilled over. I don't look watery at all. And then we just roll that out till a shoot day. Then typically what I'll do with clients is, and again, like the last week before a photo shoot, I typically like to, we also want to try to remove any foods like that final week that could cause any excess bloat. So for most clients, I'll say like, hey, let's try to avoid artificial sweeteners. Let's cut back on dairy, Brussels sprouts, like cruciferous veggies. Really, oh, there's a whole list of like foods. Let's try to keep this as simple as possible. But also that depends on the client, right? Because again, like for your shoot, you were shredded. Now, if it is like, hey, you're pretty lean, but you're not like so veiny. You look like you're so vascular. You look like a roadmap. Okay. Like we're probably best off to just rather than like messing around with all this stuff that's somewhat minutia, let's just keep the deficit going. The night before, like let's have you add about 100 grams of carbs via like white rice or some of that easily digestible carb source. We'll take you through a quick pump protocol, like 30 to 45 minutes before your shoot. Let's have you have like a bit of sugar and a couple of other things that will help your pump. And then like that's simply like for many people, depending on how lean you are, if you're just like lifestyle lean, I'd say that's the best approach. Again, like yours was where we took you through the whole like carb front loading protocol and then all these different things to make sure like you looked your absolute most optimal. But again, like on the flip side, and I apologize, man, I'm kind of rambling on this. So like my client, Paul Klingon, do you know who he is? I've
seen him on your story. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I just posted him as well, cause he's like 2 weeks out, from his shoot. Now on the flip side for him, like he wasn't someone that had tracked macros a lot in the past. Like, and typically I talked him through like, okay, on one end we have like, we could do all this stuff. So basically like the exact protocol we took you through. On the other end, like we could just keep this simple. Like, here's these foods. I want you to eat these. Like, let's add some rice the night before. Here's like your plan for the day. We'll get you pumped up and you'll still feel great either way. And he's like simpler is the better for me. So it very much depends on the client too. And that's like all things. Some people, like it's for some clients, it's very much a major stressor, like what the fuck, like this peak week and like all these things. And it's really, we don't have to make it too complex. And similarly with like, we don't mess around with trying to change your water intake, trying to change your sodium intake. Basically we want to keep all that very similar. Like there's all the, and I can't say I fully understand like for someone who was not natural. So like if you were taking gear, how would we go about this? I know that's kind of a different ball game, but for natural individuals, when we're going into like a photo shoot, a bodybuilding show, anything like that, we really don't want to mess with all the balances of like water and sodium, because more than anything, that'll probably just throw your aldosterone levels off. You'll actually probably retain more water. And it's like, and that's the thing, like the reward of trying to mess too much with like your water intake or your sodium intake is very small. Like you're not going to get much of a better result, but like the risk of if we like mess with this too much, like, hey, let's cut water way back. Let's completely remove sodium and then load it with sodium. You can definitely like bring a lot worse look, but we won't improve it much. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. That was kind of a loaded question. So I appreciate everything that you shared there. And yeah, I agree with when it comes to that peak week, you know, it's going to be less, I feel like it's going to be less important for a photo shoot than it would be like a bodybuilding show. But even a bodybuilding show is a natural. It's like sometimes people, I think, put a little too much stock into that peak week. Right. When really, like you said, it's just like, you're just trying to make sure you're like, just don't Like if you think it's going to add a lot of complexity and things like that, then it's probably not worth it because it's really not going to make that big of a difference. Most of the work's already been done.
Yeah. And like for a vacation, I wouldn't do that. Right.
Right.
Because it's even if it is like you peak for it, you're peaking for like 2 hours. Right. And then it's like, cool, I looked ripped on the beach for 2 hours. And then whatever, I had three margaritas and okay, it's gone.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. Yeah.
Actually, margarita would probably be, if you wanted to like look pretty dry and vascular for a bit, a margarita would probably be a good option. But anyways.
All right. So you heard it here first. You know, you want to look your best, peak and then do a margarita. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah. Well, and I wanted to, so again, I appreciate that answer because this is kind of just a loaded question and it's a hard thing to just kind of answer, like just, hey, how do you go about it? Because there's so many things that go into it. But first thing I like that you brought up, you know, if you're trying to maximize your potential, your look, you know, make sure you have plenty of muscle because, you know, that's going to make a big difference. A lot of people think that they just need to get leaner, but really they don't have any muscle. They're not, like you said, they're not going to be happy with how they look when they diet down. I know that the first time I got lean for my first bodybuilding show, I was just like, dude, this, I felt like I was way bigger. I think that that's kind of where everyone, what happens to everybody the first time they get pretty lean is they're not happy with how they look. You know, they definitely want, they feel skinnier. So I think that's important, you know, making sure you're spending some time building muscle. We talk about this a lot, making sure you spend that time doing that rather than just always trying to like lean out, you know, cause that you're just going to hurt your physique in the long run there. You're not going to maximize it. So I think that's important. Another thing that I liked was, you know, don't go too quick with your rate of loss on that. Like, you know, again, we want to make sure we're keeping on as much muscle as possible. And the quicker you go, you know, the more you're going to risk muscle loss, right? Because I mean, just trying to lose weight super quick like that, you're risking muscle loss and training is going to suffer, like all these things. And so, and then plus just the less calories you have, the less, that means potentially less protein, unless you literally just want to eat like chicken and fish and stuff the entire time. So, you know, that's super important there. It's something that people don't think about. I think on that too, and one thing that we can hit on is kind of picking a timeline here for it, like seeing when the vacation is, you know, if it's 6 weeks away, just realize you're probably not going to be able to maximize anyways. Right. Like, so you probably want to plan ahead a little bit too. So make sure you have plenty of time to lean out for this vacation or photo shoot. Like make sure you have plenty of time because you're probably going to need, not only are you probably not going to have the muscle you want, but you also probably are going to need a little bit more time than what you think too. That just is kind of what I've observed with myself and most people that try to diet down to like get pretty lean, you know? And then too, the other thing I like is the weight training, you know, make sure you continue to train like you're trying to build muscle. I think me and you talked about this the last time you were on this podcast is, you know, make sure that you are still training to build muscle. Even if we know that in a deficit, it's tougher to build muscle, still train like you're trying to build muscle because, you know, maybe you can still build a little bit of muscle, but even if you don't, you're still going to retain as much as possible. So I think it's important to maintain, to keep the weight training in there as well. And two, I think one other thing that we can hit on here with this question is, so obviously the week leading up to a vacation or a photo shoot. So let's kind of take this the vacation route. Cause I feel like you did the photo shoot part pretty well. Like with that, you're going to want to potentially peak, but if not, just keep doing what you're doing and just, you know, but for a vacation, I think that there's a potential for maybe throwing in like a diet break the week before, kind of bringing your calories up to maintenance. And so I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts there on that. Just because my thought on it is, if you're getting pretty lean for, say 12 weeks for a vacation, and then you go straight to your vacation, you're not really going to, your body's ready to eat, you know, especially if you're lean enough, your body's ready to eat and everything tastes better. So you're more likely to overeat. So I'm just curious to hear if you would potentially throw in a diet break the week before, or if you would just have them go into the vacation, still cutting.
No, for sure. And whenever possible in a situation like that, I'm going to try to give a client at least 3 days of eating more before, like the worst time for us to have like, hey, this is your first day with increased calories, I would say for most people is also like if it's the first day of vacation, right? So typically what I'm trying to do with most clients, and again, it depends. So like really some clients, you know, like their relationship with food, like I know, okay, Jeff, like you don't care that much about, like, to be frank, like, I don't think you care that much about food. Right. So we could like you, it's like, okay, you're going to go on vacation. Like you're good, dude. Just do your thing. But for most clients, I would say, again, like at least 3 days of let's have you at maintenance so that your body is used to eating more. Because again, if we're like the first day where I have the opportunity to eat more food is also I'm surrounded by, because also like when we're on vacation, we're going to be surrounded by more tasty foods than normal, like more calorie dense foods than normal. It's going to be a lot harder to not let that turn into like just an all out eating fest. Right. And that can easily continue for a couple of days. Whereas after like 2 to 3 days of already eating more, hunger signals have probably dissipated a bit. You're used to like, okay, I can eat more food. Like I'm good. I'm not nearly as hungry going into this vacation. So I think that that's, like at least 2 to 3 days is my minimum, like before something like that for most clients, because it sets you up so much better to like, especially if it's, hey, I want to keep cutting afterwards, or even if it is like, okay, now I just want to maintain this result. Again, that's not going to be a situation where like, well, fuck, I came back from vacation and I kind of just fell completely off the wagon on this. Right. So from a mindset perspective, more than anything else. And again, like it does, that is really going to allow your hunger levels to decrease. You're going to be able to manage that vacation so much better for most people.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's important to go over because, you know, that's a part that a lot of people don't think about. Like, for example, you know, I just got done with that mini cut and me and Allie went out of town last week and Friday night we got Chipotle and, you know, I was ready to eat. And, you know, I feel like if you're not aware of these things, it's easy to just like scarf down food. And like, I know I had to stop myself. Like I was still hungry. I was like, you know, and I feel like a lot of people's mindset is okay, cut's over. I'm hungry. I'm just going to keep eating, but you definitely need to, you know, just be aware of it. And then, like you said, for some clients, you're making sure that they're eating a few days before. So that way they're not going into the vacation super hungry. And then next thing you know, they overeat, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I think that's important. And then too, I think the last thing and then we'll move on is taking this from, you know, what is it going to look like post vacation, post photo shoot? You know, what are we trying to do the couple of weeks after that? Like what's your goal there with clients after that?
So I'm not a big fan of, and again, it depends on how lean the client is, right? Like first we have to determine, hey, is this something that you can probably sustain or, do we need to, because again, like past a certain body fat floor, you're just going to feel like shit no matter what, unless you put on more body fat. Right. And that's so most people that have gotten photo shoot lean just have to accept that, hey, if biofeedback is trash, if your training feels like garbage, like even if we do the traditional 50 to 100 calories every couple of weeks, reverse diet you up super slowly and just back out of the deficit, even if you're eating like 1500 calories more than you are right now, if you're still the same body fat, you're still going to feel like shit until you put on more body fat. Right. Like a lot of your biofeedback and your ability to build muscle isn't tied to how much you're eating. Well, like past a certain point of leanness, it's tied to how much body fat we have on our frame, right? Because then like, no matter what, our body just isn't in a good position to build muscle. So first we need to determine like how lean is the client? Are we okay with them putting on some more body fat or no? So from there, typically what I'll do is, because again, there's not a point in, by definition of we're at maintenance, we're not gaining fat. Right. So there's not really a point to like, hey, I'm going to increase 50 calories. And then in a couple of weeks, I'm going to increase another 50 calories. Typically what I'll do, we will look at their rate of loss over the last month. From there, we'll determine. So again, like let's say you're losing a pound per week approximately over the last month. So then we can assume you're probably in about a 3,500 calorie per month deficit. Right. So then like we can reverse engineer from or 3,500 calorie per week deficit. So from there, we can reverse engineer that like, okay, probably adding in another 3,500 calories per week or 500 per day puts you right around maintenance. So typically what I'm going to do is we'll bump the client back up to about 80 to 90% of their estimated maintenance just to make sure we don't overshoot it. And even more for like, honestly, I would say like, really, if you did overshoot it a bit, it's not a big deal. You can adjust the next week. Like you're not going to put on very much fat at all in like a single week, but more for the client's ease of mind, I'm typically going to say like, hey, we're doing 80 to 90% of this. Because people then at that point are typically, because so many people have heard the horror stories of like, you got super lean. Now your body is just primed to regain all of this, which if we do it correctly, yeah, there's going to be more hunger, but if we do it correctly, it's not a major concern for most people. And then from there, we're just going to look at how your body handles that intake. So typically like after that first week of eating more, we are going to see an increase in the measurement. So, and I think your clients take similar measurements to like what our clients do, right?
Yeah. Cool.
So typically the measurement One of the measurements we have clients take is the 2 inches below the navel mark. Now that's going to be the one that's most reactive to like increases in gut content. So typically we're going to see an increase there simply because you're eating more food, you have more food in your belly, and glycogen stores are going to be replenished. And as we refill muscle glycogen, that's also going to absorb some water. So we're going to weigh, typically women are going to be about 1 to 3 pounds heavier. Men are going to be about 2 to 4 pounds heavier from eating a little bit more and retaining a little bit more water. So we're expecting increases there from like the first week through the first week of eating up. But past that point, we're looking for everything, measurements, weight to stay pretty stable. Then we're probably going to, so say things stay stable, depending on the size of the individual, we're going to bump calories by, I would say 50 to another, probably 75 to 200 calories. Again, depending on the size of the client. And again, we'll see, okay, how's biofeedback? How's your training performance? How's your hunger? And how is weight and measurement shifting, right? And over typically over the course of the next 3 to 6 weeks, through that process, we'll find, okay, now we've kind of hit the upper limit of your maintenance calories, right? Like if we keep ramping calories up past this point, it looks like from the way measurements are trending, from the way weight is changing, you're probably going to start gaining fat, right? So we can see like, this is kind of the upper end of your maintenance as of now. And also like that's a moving target. Maintenance isn't just this fixed thing, because as you're eating more, you're going to have more energy to train harder. You're literally burning more calories through digestion because you're eating more food. You're going to be expending more energy through like pacing, fidgeting, blinking. Again, your body will kind of take the brakes off of all these processes just because you're eating more. So your metabolism, we kind of can create this positive feedback for a loop, this positive feedback loop for a bit, where because we're eating more, we're burning more. But again, there's an upper limit to that. Now, where that is like depends on by individual. Some people it's like super high, like, hey, the more you feed me, the more I pace, fidget, blink, or like just randomly decide to like, oh, hey, I'm going to walk 3 miles instead of drive to the store, right? Like people just start making more decisions. Some people just start making more decisions like that. And those are the people that we can really like, quote unquote, reverse diet way up. But eventually we find the upper limit of that. And then it's basically like, okay, what's your next goal? Do you just want to maintain this? Because if so, we can just hang out here. Or do you want to get back to building? Most clients, I would say, want to get back to building. And then from there, that's like a whole nother podcast. But does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think really to sum that up, it's, I think where people get themselves in trouble is when they diet for a vacation or a photo shoot. And then when they're done, they don't put any focus onto their nutrition and they just go back to just eating, you know, they don't track anything. And I think the big thing there is just monitoring these things, because that's going to be the biggest thing. Is everyone's going to be different, depends on how lean they are, how they react to more calories, all these things. And so just having some sort of structure around it post vacation or photo shoot, I think is super important there. And then obviously, like you said, do that and then decide what you want to do next, what your goals are following that.
Oh yeah. That's, I could have literally just, you summed it up so much better than I just did. Basically, I had to go on this long ass diatribe, but I don't know if that's even like correct. I don't know if that's actually what diatribe means. Tangent. Do you know what diatribe means?
No.
I'm going to look that up after this. I've never used that word before. Basically like, as you said, most people will crush a fat loss phase and then it's like, they're kind of scared to like the first couple days after, like you need a plan, because really like so many people can lose weight. So many people have lost weight over and over and over again. Like the hardest part is the maintenance afterwards. Right. And that's like the same thing with like when a client is like, hey, I've hit my goal or I've almost hit my goal. All right. I'm gonna go off and do my own thing. Of course, like I'll map out for you, like, okay, here's some maintenance. Like here's what you're looking for. But still, like, I think that's the most valuable time to coach people through. Right. Because it's, You've especially like most, I'm sure you're the same way. Like most clients who have worked with you have lost fat in the past, but there's a reason that like they hired you and come back. It's not like the losing it was necessarily the hardest part. It's okay, how do I actually turn this into a lifestyle and maintain this result? So yeah, that's the thing, is like, if it's like, okay, I reached my result. Now I'm not going to get on the scale for 2 weeks. Now I'm not going to take body measurements anymore. Now I'm not going to track my food anymore. Like that's a terrible idea. You need structure to it. You need a way to like really keep yourself accountable and honest too, because it's also easy. And I know I've made this mistake in the past for sure. Like, I remember my first diet, it was exactly like that. Like, yeah, I'm probably maintaining it. I think I'm doing pretty good. I'm just like not going to hop on the scale because I'm probably holding a little bit more water weight today. And then like repeat that for 3 weeks. Then you hop on and it's like, fuck. Okay. Like, and again, like there's, you summed it up well, man. I don't think I have anything to add to that.
Well, And yeah, we'll move on to the next question here in a minute, but you just bringing all that up, like I see it all the time, and it is super frustrating to see, you know, a client lose weight and then, you know, it's like, okay, you pretty much have did everything you could for this fat loss phase. It's time to transition out. And then, like you said, all of a sudden, now that the weight's not trending down, they want to stop taking their measure, the body, like the scale, like they want to stop weighing in because it's a few pounds heavier. And it's like, look, you still need to continue to do it. Like, I understand that it's a little bit higher, but it's still super important to do this. Like, you know, just because, again, if you stop doing it, next thing you know, you're going to be up 5-10 pounds because you didn't want to see it go up 1 or 2 pounds. And to me, I just get frustrated when that happens. And I just get on clients about making sure that they continue to do it. And it just seems to happen more often than not. But I'm glad that you brought that up. Anyways, yeah, I'll just go on a tangent about how that frustrates me. And so
like this could be a whole podcast.
Right. Cool. Yeah. I think we did the best we could with that question. It's very, again, like you said, that's like almost at least one podcast by itself right there. So I think we summed it up as best as we could. Cool. So I thought this was a pretty cool question. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. So people that you look up to in the industry, slash, you know, you find inspirational and that have helped you get to where you are today. Yeah.
I love it. So my OG fitness inspiration was Corey Gregory. actually, I think you're similar, right?
Yeah. Cause he, it was when he was like with Muscle Farm and I bought his one book, The Mindset Manual. And
Yep. Yeah. So for me, dude, it was like, I was writing this cause we're like revamping the website, rebranding everything. And it was like cool to like revisit and like look through. So like 2000, it was straight up like the first time I took pre-workout, which was like my senior year of high school. Me and my homie just, they're like, this is fucking crazy, dude. It is like back in the day, it's like the original Jacked, and like the OG NO Explode and all that. It was, I remember we just went and like, we went to the YMCA and literally did like every machine, every movement we could think of. And at the time we had no idea what the hell we were doing. But like that day I was like, dude, I'm going to be a personal trainer somehow. And then I remember like right after that was like, and this is like, I think Instagram, I didn't have Instagram until like 2012, which I think is like when it first started, but it was like Instagram and Twitter were like right at the time popping off. And I remember like Corey Gregory was like the first fitness person I followed. And I was like, he was always like posting like daily. He would like post his tweets of like his training for the day. And I always screenshot it and go do that shit. And I was like, this is so fucking crazy and like so cool what this dude is doing. Like, I don't understand it, but somehow he's just creating content. He just like, creating content around fitness, like, and I was just like falling in love with training, nutrition, and all that, like, so hard at the time. It was like, whatever this dude is doing, like, I don't get it. Like, he's like kind of online somehow and like a content creator, but I'm gonna do that, right? Like, that's the thing that I'm gonna be doing someday. And again, it's cool because this is like 2011, 2012. That was like my original, like inspiration to kind of get into things. It was so cool too to have him on the podcast. I don't know if I've ever fangirled that hard for like just from a, I think Corey's a smart dude. He's a great marketer. I would say from like, is he who I learned about training and nutrition from? No, but I like love his mindset and I love his approach to things still. And genuinely is just like, that dude, like having him on the show is everything that he like presents himself as. So I would say really like for the one person that's had probably one of the biggest impacts on me is him. Then I remember in like 20, what, like my sophomore year of college, I got super into like all Steve Cook's YouTube videos. Bulger Nation.
Real quick.
What's up?
I as you were like talking about who you're going to say, or talking about Corey Gregory, I was thinking about some other people too. And I was like, yeah, Corey. And then Steve Cook came to mind. And so when you said, like, I was like, I knew he's going to say that, but sorry, go ahead.
Dude, no, it's so funny how many people you will talk to that are like our age or like, I guess I was going to say 30, but I guess your ass is 30. Happy belated, by the way, dude. that it's like so similar. So then I was like, very similarly with him, I was like, and I don't think I still know what Steve Cook does, but he seems like he does well. But still, it was like, it's so crazy to me, like people can like And even then, my mind was training in a little bit more towards like the coaching content creation side of things, but like basically Steve Cook's a jack dude, and like, but still like his, from there, then it kind of got into like, what for the next couple of years, what I really just dug deep into, like I started following Lane Norton, started following Team 3DMJ. I was pretty lucky to early on kind of like stumble across. And I mean, I guess this was like 2015, 2016. When I first started training people in person, I started training in 2014. So like, I remember like 2015, like stumbling across Eric Helms, like a video of him going through, and I think it was before the Muscle and Strength Pyramid books were actually out, but it was like a YouTube video of him on a whiteboard with just these janky ass drawings, like going through the nutrition pyramids and like the training pyramids. Like, and again, I was like, this is crazy, dude. Like, because before that I was like, okay, I just got to avoid carbs. Carbs are what make people fat. And to me, that was like another thing. It was like mind blowing. And I think like most people in our little niche have been pretty influenced by like Team 3DMJ or like Lane Norton. I would say personally, like I love their concepts personally. Like I've learned a ton from them, but I would also say like, from then, what I was really, I was from then, like until 2018, I was just trying to absorb, learn as much as I could about like the basics of all this. Cody McBroom is someone I would say that like has probably had like one of the single biggest impacts. And that's someone that I coached under and mentored under for a very long time. From more like a, and again, I apologize, man, I'm kind of just rambling on this podcast, but again, like, so again, I had this idea of like the business I wanted to build in my head for so long, right? Like from 2012, it was kind of build this online business. I was training people in person for a long time, kind of like had my foot halfway in, halfway out. 2018, things kind of came to a head. It's like, all right, I got to go all in. I got to leave the gym. And that didn't quite like work out as I had expected. I thought I was gonna be able to take all my clients with me and like go like continue to train people in person. But like the gym wasn't taking 60% of what I was making. Turned out like I didn't get to take any of those people. So I was like, well, fuck, I quit. And I have 3 to 5 clients online now. And like, now my back's really against the wall, right? Like I gotta really like make shit happen now, which was the best thing that could happen. But like right before then, I had hired Cody to do my training in nutrition because I wanted to see like how to like build a business online or how to deliver coaching online. Cause I didn't really know what the hell I was doing. Like I had hired business coaches to kind of teach me, but really all they taught me a lot about like copywriting, but nothing about like actual delivery and giving good service. So I wanted to find someone that was giving a great service. So again, like Cody was for me, like, I would say straight up, like I have so much respect and appreciation for that dude, because he, more than anything, like I remember listening to his podcast and being like, okay, this dude kind of has like the business I want. Like he's doing what I wish I was doing, but I think he's like 34, 35. Like that's what I'll be doing then. And then I remember him listening to a podcast and it was like 3 months older than me. I was like, what the fuck? Like, okay, if this dude is doing this, why, what am I doing? And that was like when I pulled the trigger. I hired him to help me kind of mentor me through like a business life thing. And I worked with him for a couple of years. And again, I would say like from his perspective, like this is kind of different. Like I did learn a lot about training nutrition from him, but more than anything, like really almost sounds kind of woo-woo, but like showing me what I was capable of or what most, I think anyone is capable of if they're willing to just get uncomfortable and like take consistent action without being scared of like, well, fuck, like what if people like, what if Lane Norton comes and shits on my post or like anything like that. So ton of respect, appreciation for that dude. And then I would say like more recently, Renaissance Periodization, Steve Hall, I've learned a ton from. The guys at N1, I have learned a ton from as well. And honestly, man, it's crazy. I would say in the last year or year and a half, I feel like I've learned more about training and nutrition than like, I would say training actually more than like anything. Like it's almost like a whole new, like, there's just endless layers of complexity to training. And I don't know if you've been like this, but I know I've gone through like times where I feel like I knew like everything, right? And it's like the last year, I feel like I have learned so much. And I think a lot of it is the credit to both Renaissance Periodization and N1. Like N1 like takes such a different approach to things, but I know like I've learned so much about like biomechanics and like training for hypertrophy. So yeah, like what I'm taking their program design course right now, again, Steve Hall is someone that I've learned a lot from. He's coaching me currently. And then Martin McDonald, I think, has had a pretty big impact also. He was like one just wrapping up Mac Nutrition. And he was like back with like Helms and all them. I kind of stumbled across him too, which was very, very fortunate, because I know a lot of people were like weren't lucky enough. And the first person they were influenced by was like Paige Hathaway or something. Right.
Yeah, all those, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, all those, it was funny, like, listening to you talk, because it seemed like it literally was kind of the same evolution that I had in terms of learning from everyone that you did. I will say, though, that one thing that I picked up that I wanted to say is I can definitely tell that you focus more on training in the last year. I can just tell by your content that you've put a lot more time into learning about training, which is cool. Mm-hmm. I haven't really looked too much into N1. I see a lot of their stuff though, and I find it interesting and something that I obviously need to look into some more. I will say so, but again, Steve Cook, and then like you said, for me to get into like the evidence base, it started with kind of like Lane Norton, and then I watched those videos that you talked about with Eric Helms too. And so it's kind of crazy to hear all that. The couple that I wanted to add on there too, other than what you said, obviously RP. I think for you too, like. And this was, I'm very thankful that I ran into them or found them when I did, because they really helped me during that time, was Mind Pump. They helped me out during that time. Like we've talked about this in the past, like recently too, where it's like I think me and you both are to the point now where we like their training now, like it's fantastic. They're super smart guys, but it's like almost, it's more like it would help me during that time, but now it's like, you know, they're still great people, but the training is not necessarily where I go to for my information anymore, but still they help me with the business side too, I feel like. And then another one I wanted to add on there, especially for like online trainers, is Jonathan Goodman. He helped me. I remember I read his book when I first started training, and that really helped me get my business rolling. And then on the online side of things as well. And then obviously for me, you know, you helped me with my business and coaching me now has been very beneficial as well too. So obviously that's not somebody that you can say because it's yourself, but for me, you know, those have been people that I just wanted to add to that list as well.
I appreciate being on that list, dude. Yeah. Mind Pump is a great one. Also, I think that Mind Pump definitely, like as an in-person trainer, was so helpful. And that is like very much their content, I think, is geared towards like the people that like, hey, this lady can train 2 to 3 times per week. Like, her knees are jacked up. She just wants to feel better and like have, whereas like now very much, I think what we're both drawn to is like, I want to get fucking as jacked as possible. And I don't care if I have to take like 3-minute rest periods between all my sets, right? Like if that's most optimal, I'm going to, whereas like, it's very much like, I definitely learned a ton of, to better train, to meet a lot of like more gym pop people where they're at. I learned so much from them. I would say again, like where like the people we tend to coach now, I think it's a little bit different message, but yeah, no, I couldn't agree more, man.
Yeah. They really got me thinking more like what I liked about them is, like you said, it got me away from like, I think if I wouldn't have found them when I did, my training style would be a lot different. It would be more like, you know, high intensity, like just the stuff that you think you're supposed to do. Like, and if it wasn't for them, I don't think I would have felt as confident doing what I'm doing and how I did it. So, very, very helpful there. But yeah, cool. That's a great list. And it's kind of funny to hear how, you know, I had known like most of your, you know, who you looked up to and stuff like that, but it was kind of funny to hear how we both kind of like took the same route to get to it.
Everyone has Steve Cook in common, dude. I'm telling you, it's so funny.
Well, with Steve Cook, I remember it was like right around when I first started training in person too. And I just loved his YouTube videos. And I'm like, this motherfucker is freaking just living the life, posting YouTube videos. I'm like, God, that sounds amazing. But like you said, it's funny because I had the same thought as you, where it was like, I don't really know exactly what he does, but like you said, he does well for himself. So good for him.
I still have no idea what he does.
Yeah. So good for him, but whatever. So cool. Anything else you want to add to that question?
Man, I don't think so.
Yeah. Cool. I think we got time for one or two more. There's one that I think that I want to ask you real quick, and it won't take long, but this one, was from a client, and he just wants to know go-to post-workout meals when in a cut versus building. You know, basically, how did like the post-workout meals differ between the two times?
So, I mean, the thing with your peri-workout nutrition, meaning like your pre-workout, intra-workout, post-workout nutrition, is I think people overplay, like, I think people downplay nutrient timing too much, right? I think it is more important than people give it credit for. Like, I always like to say, like, a lot of sessions where you are well-fueled and like you're optimizing your training, optimizing recovery, versus a lot of sessions where your training is okay and your recovery is okay, like compounded over a couple months, that's a pretty big difference, right? So then when we're looking at, I would say straight up, like if we're looking at pre and post workout nutrition, the pre and post workout meals are the two that I would probably try to change the least, whether I'm cutting or building. Like no matter what, like in a cut, those are going to be the ones that I'm going to put the most priority on. Now, it's very much like it's on a spectrum. Like the more dialed in you are with your pre-workout nutrition, the less dialed in you need to be with your post-workout to an extent, right? Like there's this saying, like we know there's not the magical anabolic window, right? But like if you're training fasted, the post-workout meal is going to be quite a bit more important for helping your recovery than like if, okay, a solid pre-workout meal had a good amount of carbs, protein, and then your body, basically those nutrients are kind of just becoming available post-workout, right? So, I mean, for me personally, my post-workout is almost always going to be, I have a meal that is, it's called El Jefe. I get it from Protein House, but this is straight up what I always eat. It is white rice. So basically a quick digesting carb source. And the thing is with like carbs post-workout, unless you're training later in the day, as long as you hit your carb totals across the day, like people talk about replenishing glycogen stores. But really, like unless you're training later in the day again, so like if you're someone who's training twice per day, it's not as important, because no matter what, like as long as you hit your carb totals across the day, your glycogen stores will be replenished by the next time you train the next day or whatever it is. But like from the perspective of decreasing cortisol levels, like when you're taking those carbs, there's going to be a little bit larger spike in insulin, which is going to help decrease cortisol, which is going to get you in a more anabolic state, or I should say like anti-catabolic state. And thus recovery is going to be a little bit better. So really like those carbs, a protein source, of course, like typically I aim for at least 40 grams of protein. I really like to say like between your pre and post workout meal, most clients, like let's try to get about a half to 2/3 of your daily carb intake in those two meals, because again, like pre-workout, that's going to help keep, depending on the dose, that's going to help keep blood sugar stable. Post-workout, again, like that's going to help blood cortisol, that's probably going to help recover, and it is going to help replenish glycogen stores faster. But basically we just want to make sure, really it's like for muscle, we want some protein to stimulate muscle protein synthesis, and it's like it should be from a quality source, right? Like we also want to be able to hit our leucine threshold, which is basically, leucine is an amino acid within protein that is kind of the trigger to stimulate muscle protein synthesis, which is basically the process of your body synthesizing dietary protein into muscle protein. But so basically 20 to 40 grams or more from a high quality protein source. I would say most people are safe with like aiming for closer to like 25 to 40 grams of protein, just to make sure we've got an adequate protein. And then I really, again, like a fast digesting carb source. Now, sometimes it'll be like, okay, so like the meal I typically eat is gonna be, typically I'll have like a protein shake right after I get done training. And then like 30 minutes later, it's hot as hell here, so I'm pretty nauseous after I get done training. Then like 30 minutes later after that's gone, then I'll eat like this meal, which again is like lean ground turkey, white rice, pineapple. There's also lean ground beef in there and a little bit of broccoli, but basically it's a low fat, high carb, high protein meal. And then, yeah, that's my go-to. That was a question, right? I got a little off track. Cool.
Well, I'm glad you hit on the importance of it. Like, so a couple things that I want to hit on it, and hopefully I can remember all of them. But so from my understanding, so obviously, again, like you said, training or nutrition around your workout is going to be important, right? Like, cause you said it's one of those things where if you're constantly not like in a good state to perform in your training session, like you're going to, over time, that's going to hurt your muscle growth. So I think that right. It is important to have to make sure that you're feeling for that. I will say though, that during a cut versus building, you know, when you're in a cut, you're just getting less calories overall. So, and I know you mentioned this, but making sure that you for sure get your meals around your workout is probably going to be even more important. It's still important during a building phase because, again, we're trying to build muscle. And so therefore we need to make sure we're doing as much as we can to improve our performance in the gym. But since you're eating more food overall, you probably just have more food in your system. So I think it's, again, it's still very important during a building phase, but it's probably just slightly less important than during a cut. Now, I think that it's probably going to depend on the person and things like that. But yeah, I think that that's important to distinguish there. And then obviously the biggest difference is that maybe you have to eat a little bit less during a cut just because you're just getting less food overall. I think those would be the biggest differences. And obviously that would probably be via carbohydrates. But like you said, most meals around your workouts, you want them to be lower in fat, pretty high carbohydrate, and then moderate protein. My go-to post-workout is basically rice, like the best basmati rice and the Uncle Ben's. I just love throwing that in the microwave. And then usually it's tuna, the tuna packets, but sometimes it may be like rotisserie chicken or shrimp, whatever I get. And then if I'm building, I'll throw usually a piece of fruit in there, like if I just have more calories, something like that. So I think there, just again, like you said, make sure it's moderate protein, high carbohydrate. You're pretty much good to go there. Also, real quick, Protein House, I went to it. They have one in Kansas City. So it's pretty good.
It's pretty solid. You got to salt it pretty heavily, but I'm a fan, dude. I think you cook like I do. we got to make a macro friendly cookbook. It would be like, this meal is a plain Greek yogurt. This meal is a tuna packet. Anyways, I don't think I have anything else out there.
People wouldn't be very happy with it. Yeah. So they'd be like, this is boring as hell, but you know, it's effective and you know, ultimately that's what it is. Also, you did bring up earlier, you said, I don't care about eating. That's false. I love eating. I just, you know, over time you learn how to, you know, make it work with what your goals are though.
No, exactly. I'm
awesome. Yeah. So one more quick question, then we'll end this. So I thought this was an interesting question, and I honestly don't know what I would say to this, but I feel like I'm curious to hear what you have to say on it. So a client asked, if we were to both start to develop new research on any area of the industry, what would it be and why?
Damn, that is a good question.
And here, and this is why I feel like me and you would struggle with this, is because me and you aren't researcher, so it's like kind of hard to distinguish like what exactly needs to be done essentially. But
I think that I would probably, topic that's come up a lot on my podcast lately with the guests I've had, is kind of the relationship between like your aerobic system, insulin sensitivity, and metabolic flexibility, and then how those impact hypertrophy. That's probably honestly like what I would dig into if there was like more. And I think there could very well be like a solid amount of research that I haven't really dug into well enough yet. I think that's probably the direction that I would go, because I do like, it's an interesting topic for sure. Or like, is it really, I don't know. What's your take on that?
No, I think that's interesting. So basically it sounds like you'd want to find out like the role of the aerobic system in building muscle, like how big of a role does it play? I guess finding out there would be like, you know how like the perception is you don't really want to do too much cardio because it interferes with muscle growth. But at the same time, like it's probably a good idea to develop that system because that could potentially help with muscle hypertrophy.
Yeah. And like more or less like that can also help your metabolic flexibility, which in turn could like impact your nutrient partitioning when you're training. So like, and it's interesting, it's kind of more theory than anything else, but like, you know how like when you get like, again, Brandon DeCruz and I were talking about this on the podcast, like when you get past a certain point in the building phase and it's like, okay, my pumps are kind of just getting worse, my training is a lot shittier. And again, it's kind of counter to like the P ratio topic, where like more and more, so there's not like a ceiling to where like, okay, we had at this point of diminishing returns. But again, and like Brandon's like hypothesis around this was like, well, for some individuals, like your insulin sensitivity has deteriorated so much, your body's not able to like partition these carbohydrates as effectively. And thus, like, that's part of why you're getting worse pumps, why your training is worse, et cetera. And again, like, a lot of that ties into as well, like metabolic flexibility and like your aerobic condition. It's an interesting topic. I would like to see more about or learn more about.
Yeah. I think it would be interesting. Cause you know, again, I think that does have a big role in muscle growth. And like too, I'm the same way. The further I get into a building phase, you know, you just don't feel as great and your workouts just are not as good. So that would be interesting to find out if you could improve that, as you move forward. One thing too, that I did remember, and this is kind of something that I feel like is starting to get researched and, is, you know, Bill Campbell's kind of talking about fast, how fast can you go with like weight loss and fat loss? Like, I know there's some stuff out there, but how fast can we go, you know, with it? Because I think that could be beneficial, maybe not so much for Gen Pop clients, but people that are more advanced, you know, like how fast can you go without risking it? And I was telling you before we started, he is having at the ISSN, he's having I think it's on rapid fat loss. I'm going to look this up real quick. He is going over some new research on that. So, and I had him on the podcast recently talking about it. He couldn't say anything about it when he was on because it was all new, but yeah.
But I'm super interested to hear what comes with that. Because again, I know that it's like around like 0.75 to 1% is the number that's normally thrown out there. But again, I can't say that I know like the exact research that those numbers come from.
Right. So he, where is it? Yeah. So rapid fat loss, how fast is too fast? So I think it'll be interesting, to see, there with that, and maybe they can continue to figure out what exactly is optimal for it. So, but like you said, I don't know exactly where those numbers come from either. You know, we just read what, you know, the general recommendations are on that. So
I know like my 0.5, actually, I know the 0.5, the 1% of body weight is from, it's like Eric Helms, and like Alan Aragon's paper on like contest prep guidelines, actually. But yeah, that is interesting to think about those things and like, okay, this guideline that we put out here, where did this come from? But yeah, I like it, man.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it, dude. That's all the time we got for today. Yeah. Anything else you want to add? Anything coming up for you or anything like that here soon that you want to share with the audience?
Man, I don't think so. Just the normal, putting out blogs every week, at barefit.com. I guess we're rebranding soon, but I'm not going to say our name here. So soon it won't be at barefit.com. Yeah, check out my podcast at Living Lean. Follow me on Instagram at Jeremiah Bear. And I think that's about it.
Cool. Yeah. I know last time we spoke, you were, with your podcast, you had took a little time. You weren't putting as much time into it and getting as many guests, but it seemed like you're starting to ramp it back up again and getting more regularly now, getting a couple out a week again, or.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's like the frequency never really dropped it. I wasn't having as many guests on for a bit there, but definitely I've ramped that up and I'm stoked about the guests we have coming up soon too. So yeah, no, the podcast is definitely something that has ramped back up as far as like guests coming on, things of that nature as well. So yeah, I don't think I have anything else to plug there.
Cool. All right, man. Well, I appreciate your time today for coming on. Obviously we'll do this again sometime soon, and yeah, we'll talk soon.
Of course, dude. I appreciate you having me.